Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This week, we are going to be talking about energy bodies and the energy system related to the body. For example, chakras, auras, meridians, all that kind of stuff. So, Donald, I know you have some familiarity with this, especially with some of the work you do and just in previous conversations and meetups. So why don't you talk a little bit about, you can just start wherever you like.
I'm going to come at it from a little bit of a history thing because I am really surprised at the knowledge that people have right now as opposed to when I actually started learning about this stuff. And like a lot of people, when I first started learning, they knew about the auras. You know, it's like, oh, colors around the body, gotcha. Chakras was a little more, oh, I haven't really looked into that, but I've been meaning to, da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, now people are getting into, like, multidimensional type stuff, and, you know, just everything that has to do with the energy body and, everything that's connected with it as well. And so I one of the things that I find constantly surprising is how the chakras, you know, create the aura, you know, kind of like the chakras are the energy center and the aura is the light that exudes outside of that. If I understand them correctly, and I don't claim to be expert on, just somebody with knowledge, is every chakra, especially the major ones, connect to some part of your life that, you know, you can work with. Kind of like what we've talked about in previous episodes of divination, you know, where you can have a reading where cards can relate to relationships or job or something like that. Certain chakras can relate to those same areas. And then, to me, the aura is just kind of like the afterglow of that.
You know, I think of the aura kind of the way I don't like the visual, but I like the analogy. I always think of the aura is like cilia in a way, you know, like little tiny feeler sensors.
Hmm.
Because I do believe that the energy body, but the aura in specific, is really kind of our gauge on how to interact with other people.
Hmm.
I think our aura has feelers, but it's an emitter and a receptor at the same time.
Can you explain that a little bit more? Exactly, you know, how you mentioned it has cilia, like a little, like little whiskers on a cat or something like that, or
yeah, like whiskers on a cat, exactly. You know, I always think of like the sea anemone, and they have the little kind of, or the coral, and they always have those little feelers out.
Oh,
you know, because I think it has several functions. It's like a Swiss Army energy thing, kind of where it's. You've got the
Boy Scouts
the little
of
tiny screwdriver, yeah. I think of the
when you go camping, don't forget your aura.
Yeah, I know exactly. Well, this aura has a watch battery remover or something.
And it's solar powered.
And it's solar powered, exactly. Which, you know, that could tie in. But, the aura I always think of as it's the sensor. It senses your aura senses other people's auras. And other people's auras sense your auras. But then again, your aura also emits. It emits something about you, and it also feels something about other people. So it has that function. And I also believe that it's also a protector. It seals in and protects the inner workings of our energy body.
Kind of like the skin?
Yeah, kind of like the skin.
Hmm.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think of it like, you know, when you're driving down a road and you see the heat
mm-hmm.
off the
road?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think of the aura that way. And also, it's because if you put your hand on the road, it'll be very, very hot. But if you put your hand over the road, you can still feel the heat off the road, but you don't have to touch the road to feel it.
Ah. So that brings up the whole idea of when people meet, you know, auras interact. From your experience, you know, if you want to talk from personal experience or from what you've heard with how your aura reacts with certain experiences and, you know, certain people.
Mm, okay.
If that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. I think with our aura, when we are really in a excitable and social mood and just really, you know, like if we're at a party or if we're, you know, really in a celebration mood, I think our aura expands out. Because when two auras come together, I think they're our energies start to interact, mm-hmm. when auras start to overlap. But when people are really wanting to be protective and don't want people around, or somebody's threatening to invade your personal space, you know that when you say somebody's getting in my personal space,
oh, yeah.
they're very literally getting in your auric field. And you want to pull away, and you may pull your aura into you to try to keep their energies and your energies from intermeshing too much. But sometimes, you know, an aura emits enough out of your body that it doesn't take much to get in that personal space sometimes.
Do you believe that the, you know, empathy comes from the aura, or is that more from like the chakras or more internal?
Empathy? Oh, you mean like being empathic?
Yeah.
Or empathetic, which would you?
Being able to, you know, get in touch with other people's emotions and thoughts.
I think it's some aura, but not 100%.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I say that is because with the aura implying proximity, you can still do that. With, like, for example, I was, last fall, I was in a funk. And, you know, I'm usually pretty critical with my self-examination. And I'm like, why am I in this really depressed funk? But things were great in my life. And then I found out, and then 2 days later, my friend called me and he said, yeah, my father just passed away. And I was picking up on his emotions. And he's very, he's basically an emotional, I don't know, like a big giant satellite dish emotionally. he's not one that, you know, guards his emotions.
He has a strong transmitter.
He has a strong transmitter, exactly, and I could feel it, but I wasn't in his proximity. So with that being said, I don't think the aura is at play there. I think there's probably several things, but I think the chakras are at play at that point.
Yeah, so where do you make the division between what the aura does and what the chakras, what their role is? Is the aura just kind of a sensor, you know, transmitter, receiver, or is there more that the aura does? Does it provide more than a protective layer like our skin and, you know, whiskers on a cat where we actually sense other people?
Well, you know, here's the thing. It's like, you know how all the organs function together? A pancreas? I decided not to go with the spleen on this. Do you appreciate that?
Yeah, I'll work with that.
Okay, we're going with the pancreas. I apparently can't touch gallbladder either for some people. So the pancreas, since you need one to live, and everyone who's listening to the show has got a working one. With the pancreas, it's like it doesn't do any good by itself.
Mm-hmm.
It only works in conjunction with all your other organs. And the aura and the chakras are very much the same way. They're very interdependent. What your chakras are doing is going to affect what your aura is doing. What your aura is doing is going to affect what your chakras are doing.
What you're talking about with being around people in their emotional state, and you said that your acquaintance, you know, you didn't even have to be around them. But I've experienced certain things with, you know, friends and family members in certain areas where there's a group of people in a room. I walk in, and there was this one experience where I literally felt like I was running full speed and slammed into a wall because the tension in the room was just so thick.
Oh, yeah. And see what you just said? Our lexicon so often addresses our energy bodies. The tension in the room was thick. This is a very physical feeling, but yet we describe tension with a very physical property, thickness.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it just blew me away because I've never felt anything that strongly before or since, and it was pretty intense.
Was there a lot of tension literally in the room?
Oh, yeah.
Was there people at odds?
Saying that they were at odds is putting it very mildly.
Okay.
And not only that, it was, you know, family. So, you know, I had a strong connection with them on that level too. It wasn't just, you know, a couple people, you know, a couple family members here and there. It was, you know, like probably four or five adults, three children, and everyone from males and females intermixed. And it was a significant group, and everyone, I opened the door, I stopped, and for a moment there, I was about to just turn around and walk out because I felt like I'd just been hit over the head.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time...
And how did you manage it?
I didn't stay around very long.
Ah, there you go. Always a wise choice. Retreat.
You know, this was years and years and years ago before I really understood energy, but I did understand one thing. I could feel the main reactor, the main source of between the two people, two family members that were creating this whole tension, and it was grabbing other people, and they were getting riled up and causing more tension. And they were sitting across the room from each other. It would not have been unusual for me to walk through them. So I was like, I'm going to cut this energy right now. And I literally just walked right through them. I'm going to, free up a little bit more of this energy. And the way that the room was set up was there's room and then there was a wall, and right on the other side of the wall was a hallway. And so basically over the next 10, 15 minutes or so, I spent a lot of time going from down the hallway and then walking directly through the room itself. And whenever I came through the doorway of the room, then I just imagined me being a huge snowplow. Mm-hmm. And just moving through it, and things.
Well, that seems dangerous to do, Donald. It's risky.
It is. Yeah. Like I said, this was when I was still learning about energy and everything like that. But it did start to clear things out a little bit. So I wouldn't recommend it to anybody that doesn't know what they're doing. Yeah. Because it is risky, and there were a few times where I realized that I was starting to be influenced by the tension as well.
Oh, sure.
And that's why I would walk through the room at a half pace, and when I got back to the hallway, it was like shake off, clear, reground, recenter, da-da-da-da-da.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That much about energy work I knew. I knew how to ground, I knew how to center, I knew how to clear my aura, and I knew how to do it quickly, and I knew how to also shield very well as well. So for anyone that's listening, if you don't know how to do that really, really, really well, and you find yourself in this type of a situation, best thing to do is just turn around and come back later, if possible.
Yeah, just leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not always possible, but, it's always the best mode of action.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if possible, definitely. That was a huge lesson right there, where it's just like, okay, so this is the level of what it can get to, and it can probably even go higher, but this is the level at which you can work with without totally losing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm talking about, my guides and my higher self, being like, okay, so you want to learn about energy. Let's give you an experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That was definitely a very intense experience to be, for nothing else, or if nothing else. Have you had an experience like that, or an experience that you were really aware of, your aura and the influence of other people's energy, or just the vibe of the room, as they say?
Just recently, Jackie and I went over to see some people, and it's really interesting. We went over to see some people, and Jackie went over there first. She actually it was a garage sale that some people were having. Mm-hmm. And Jackie went over to the garage sale, and I was at home, and it was the morning, and I wasn't really quite awake. I'm a very slow waker-upper, very slow. So I really need to make sure that I'm centered and grounded before I really go about my day, because the way I wake up, I wake up so untethered, because we talked about that in the dreams episode, the way I am in my dreams episode, that I'm so not back from that whatever plane,
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she went over to the garage sale, and she was checking some things out, and I stayed. And then she came back. She said, oh, there's some things I want you to check out. So I said, I'll go check them out. I left the house, and impulsively, for some reason, and I don't know why, I did the white light thing, where you shield yourself so it's white light, and I did some grounding. And I said, okay, I need to do this. I go over there, and everything was fine. Everybody was all good. Everybody was kind of pretty cool. When you pull down your energy, you kind of start mellowing yourself, mm-hmm. to kind of get people to mellow around you.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't always work. And, it's just to not lend. And for some reason, I found myself doing that also impulsively.
Hmm.
later on, Jackie and I get back home, and she's like, oh, man, you should have been over there when I was over there. The people holding the garage sale were just nipping and at each other's throats, and they were, and the energy was just, it was just really aggressive. And I was like, really? She goes, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, well, that kind of explains why all of a sudden, impulsively, just decided to do that. But then again, I don't know if I've just become versed at that, because in the school district, I work on people's computers when the computers are having problems. So when I get there, they're already all sorts of frustrated.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just kind of a standard of mine that I just build this in, you know.
You kind of walk, but you walk in, it's like, I am here to save your computer. Like, oh, thank you. Somebody who can actually make this work so I can get
no,
it.
No, it's not quite like that. You could feel they're... This stupid computer, I'm trying to get my grades entered, and I can't do it. I hate the computer, you know, and you get that energy.
Oh, yeah.
You're the best target often. I'm the best target because the children are not appropriate targets, and staff members probably are staying away because they know how the energy works. So I'm usually the likely target.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how I deal with that?
Mm.
Just compassion.
Oh, yeah.
I don't actually... do much grounding or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, I ground every day before I leave for work and just sometimes through the day. But I'm just like, you know what? I understand that it's frustrating. And sometimes that's just enough as it is. That's all they need. So, you know, energy and emotions are so, so integrally tied, even though not all the chakras deal with emotions directly. Just the energy body and the emotional body, it's hard to really, you know, say where one stops and the other one begins.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why how I interact with on a normal basis with people is for years and years and years, I've been consciously working on developing a style of non-judgment. In other words, removing judgment with people. The way my energy interacts with people that I meet for the first time, they sense on some level that it's like, oh, I'm not being judged at all with this person, and they're actually kind of fun to be around and talk to.
Well, yeah, let me ask you this.
Okay.
There are often people who, and you can go into the health thing too, there are people who feel they need to be judged. And if you go in non-judgmentally, have you ever encountered people that do what they can to get you to pass judgment on them because they need that to be validated in whatever way, positive, negative, it doesn't matter.
If I have, I haven't noticed it, because one of the things that I've noticed over the years is the more comfortable I and more aware I am of my energy, the more people that are able to interact with my energy harmoniously are attracted to me, and the more the people are not able to interact with my energy, you know, harmoniously, they either don't stay around very long or, you know, they move on. And so I couldn't actually sit there and say, oh, well, this person, you know, in this occurrence felt like they really need to have that judgment and I didn't offer it to them, so they didn't stay around. I normally have been in groups for the past few years or so. So it's possible that if somebody was in that need of, you know, one kind of judgment or whatnot, then they probably got it from somebody else. And there have been times where, you know, people would say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm probably just a, you know, white trash type so-and-so and this and that. Like, no, not any more than anyone else, or, you know.
Well, you know what's interesting, though? The reason this is closely related to psychic vampirism,
mm-hmm.
or energetic vampirism, or whatever you want to call it. And not always do people need to be judged. Sometimes if you come in with a really positive energy and you're really coming from a good place, people are going to, energetic vampires may actually, and almost always, not almost always, but most of the time, they're not even aware.
Mm-hmm.
They may try to drain that.
Oh,
and I think you've encountered that before, because I think you've talked about that before.
Yeah, when you put it in that context, when you put it in that way, I'm like, oh yeah, there have been times when I have noticed people that were just, I think I mentioned, you know, there was a friend in, I think it was high school, where I was going over to their house with a group of other friends, and I hadn't really hung out with them before. It was kind of this acquaintance that I know is hanging out with this person. Hey, they're having some people over. And I remember walking up, and I got within probably about 15, 20 feet, and all of a sudden I felt just, I mean, it was within a moment, just my energy just dropped from a high level to just like blah.
So, if you can't leave that situation, then how do you deal with that? I mean, is grounding even enough? Or is psychic shielding and the mirror trick and all that other stuff enough?
See, from that experience and a couple others that I had around the same time, that's when I developed a timed self-defense mechanism for my energy body, where basically I set up a form of shielding that basically works against every psychic vampire that I've ever encountered, and I don't have to consciously worry about it because when I actually set it up, I had it on a timer that it was basically, okay, whenever I run into a psychic vampire, this shield instantly goes up. And I went through the whole steps to create it. It's like putting a program in a computer where it's like an antivirus program where, it's constantly monitoring stuff coming in and out of your computer. You don't have to sit there and watch it every time. Whenever I meet somebody who is a psychic vampire, especially over the past 5 years or so, it automatically kicks in, and I don't even realize it until, it's kicked in. My energy is no longer being fed on.
Well, the thing is that that's as good as the person using it. I have to believe that you, like everybody else on this planet, has an off day.
Oh yeah.
And if someone, and if any of those psychic vampires catch you on an off day,
No. See, this is what I'm saying. I don't have to worry about it. It is not related to my emotional state whatsoever. Because when I actually created it, I created it in a place of, positivity and of high energy and where I was by myself. And I had it set to where whenever I need to have it up, it automatically goes up. I don't even consciously am aware of it. And then when I am safe again, it automatically goes down. So it's all automatic. I don't have to consciously be there or anything, and it's not tied to my emotions or mental state whatsoever.
Well, then, what about a case where you find yourself in a situation where you've been asked for help from a person who might be an energy leech?
That has happened.
And where you have to, what I'm saying is you have to open yourself up a little bit. Because, here's the thing about the protection. One of the things I read about was, one of the ways to protect yourself from ne negative energy is envisioning a reflective shield around you so that if anyone has negative intentions, they're reflected back out.
That normally doesn't work very well for me, but anyway, go
Well,
ahead.
I don't really care for that. And the thing is I'm not really a fan.
A lot of people don't want to see themselves in a mirror anyway. It can do more harm than good, in my opinion, but
Well,
anyway.
yeah, I don't like it either, that kind of thing. But I think there's times that if you go around and you're so shielded off from so many people, even if you're not using the mirror thing, but you're shielded and you're well shielded, I think there can be a degree that you've separate. There's a sense of separation. If we're really working from a place of compassion, to me, the definition of compassion is understanding that we are all reflections of each other and we're all connected. And when you shield yourself from another person, to me, there's a potential that there could be a disconnection.
Oh yeah, for me that is my safety mechanism because at the levels that I work with some people, it can get really intense really fast and really quickly. So there is a disconnect where if I do not quote unquote keep my head on my shoulders and I get drawn into the drama, then I am no good to anybody else. It's kind of like whenever you fly, they say, if you're flying with children, put the oxygen mask on you first and then your child, because if you're out, a child ain't going to be able to get their oxygen mask either.
Right.
And I'm glad you brought this up because a lot of people, do shield, but they, and it blocks them off from everything. For me, when I'm working with a client, to keep myself connected but disconnected, I have my guides, my higher self, be the filter, so that I have as much coming in that I need to offer the assistance that I can, but not so much that I'm overwhelmed and get drawn in to the drama of what of this person's experience, where I'm no longer helpful to them.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
That makes sense, sure. So, yeah, it makes complete sense.
And it allows me to be connected, but not connected, because one of the things I found with me long, long time ago is I am extremely, extremely sensitive to energy. People's thoughts, their emotional states, I'm like a sponge, and I pick it up. If I do not realize that this is other people's stuff, I can get worn out really, really fast. You know, I could, if I've worked in an office before, and where I knew when people were, my cubicle mates around me were having a bad day, and I could, be like, oh, okay, they're just having a bad month. This was before I learned how to, shield my energy from the effects of other people. I would be there for maybe half an hour to an hour, and all of a sudden I felt like I'd been up for 12 hours, that I worked a whole day, because my energy had just been sucked so much.
Right.
And luckily I had worked in an office where there wasn't a lot of other people around, where when I walked outside of the building, and so on my break, 15 minutes, I was like, okay, I'm walking down the stairs. I'm going to walk out, to the little field, and I'm going to do a really, really, really fast, recharge.
Yeah.
That's when I was starting to develop, okay, how do I work with energy? This can't go on all day. And it wore me out. It wore me out really badly day after day, and I didn't stay at that job very long because of it.
When you do your energy work, do you sense the chakras? Do you work with the chakras at all?
Oh, if it's called for. I don't see the chakras, but I do work with them when it's required. It's really weird because, I guess it's not really weird. when you do something long enough, the weirdness factor kind of leaves. But with different people's chakras, I sometimes run into something that I've never seen before. I'm really familiar with how my chakras are set up and what they look like. I'm really familiar with other people that I've met, other people that I've worked with over the years, and what their chakras look like, and what, have kind of a baseline of what looks healthy and what looks, unhealthy. And every so often I'll run into somebody where my guidance will say, you need to work on, this, we'll take the third chakra, just for example. You need to work on the third chakra. I'm like, oh, okay. And I'll go in and I'll get into that energy of their third chakra, and I'll be like, whoa, this is really weird. What do I do here? And that's why any energy work that I do, I am in constant communication with my higher self and with my guides, because they will tell me, okay, you need to have this be the outcome. I'm like, okay, now I know how to work with this. They'll also give me a bunch of other information at the same time. So, yeah, I don't see chakras. I don't see auras. But I definitely can feel them, and I definitely work with them.
Okay.
How about you?
Oh, do I? Well, I'm not an energy practitioner.
But yeah, but you work with energy, especially on yourself. I know that you work with it on yourself.
I do. I work with energy on myself. I work with energy on Jackie. And as far as, auras, I see them in people.
Really?
And some more than others. It just depends on the person. I was at the wedding that I did just last weekend. I was talking to a guy. I met him for the first time. I'm like, well, man, this guy, I could see a visible, it's not like a line like you draw with a pencil or anything like that, but I could see where the edge of his aura extended. It extended quite a ways out from his body, And I think, he was tossed back a couple of beers, and that might have had some effect on it. And I was in a very, very, very highly sensitive state anyway. Because I was officiating this wedding, so I was all my receptors were really high up. So,
I heard you did an exceptional job too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was. I loved it. It was great.
I saw the compliments on Facebook, and so I was like, sweet.
Oh yeah, it was great. I felt really connected with him. So that was awesome. So I can and in fact the groom. In this wedding, I see his aura quite often, actually, when I'm just talking to him, just on a regular basis. Other people, I don't see their aura. I have to look for it. And but there's I don't see there's sometimes I feel other people's auras where I don't see it, and I'm one of those people. Intuitively, I'm not a visual person, so when I see an aura, I'm like, I have. It's kind of a wow. I mean, I'm not. I don't. I'm not a. I don't hear stuff. I don't see stuff. I just. I'm very clairsentient. I just know things. And it just pops into my head, you know.
And to me, I see stuff and I hear stuff and I feel stuff. I'm clear. I don't know. I'm clear everything. If there's where you can see, hear, and feel. So, I mean, I don't like being around people that have poison oak and poison ivy.
Oh, interesting.
Because I will actually start to feel that if I'm not aware of it, that I'm not aware that they have it.
Interesting.
So.
But yeah, the chakras, yeah, it's sometimes, but I don't. But the thing is I really don't actively go to look for people's chakras because that's really not my business. You know, I'm not going to mess with their chakras. I'm not going to do any energy changing of them. I can tell you exactly where mine are on my body. I know it because I could feel. I could feel them. Some I feel more often and at more times than others, but I could draw a line around where they were. I mean, they're not definitive, again, by a line, but, I mean, I could tell you where they are. It's very distinct. And for Jackie, I could tell you exactly where hers are, and they don't correlate exactly where mine are.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really go by a chart, because I think every chakra is in a general area of a person, in a targeted area, but I think where the focus of that chakra is tends to shift a little bit from one person to the next.
And just to be clear, we're talking about the major chakras right here.
Talking about the big seven, yeah. The big seven.
Not the minor chakras, because there's a few hundred more of those, I believe.
Not the third cousin chakra twice removed, or or the little, you know, tiny, you know, housekeeper chakra, or any of those.
Now, you were telling me about a chakra that you found some information on recently, like the zeal chakra.
The zeal point chakra. During one of my massage therapy sessions, my massage therapist, she was my massage practitioner, I prefer to call her, actually. She does integrated energy therapy, which is it's an attunement, it's a type of energy work. It's not specific to massage, but it can be, and she likes to use it integrated. And so she's doing some massage work on me, and she pointed out, she says, yeah, you have this chakra that, I don't know. Well, she said there's an energy point on you that's highly activated right now. And I said, what's that? And she said, well, it's right where you're at the back of your neck, where your neck meets your skull, right at that little point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and I looked online, and it turned out to be a zeal point chakra, which is kind of it's a little bit tied to the soul chakra and another chakra. And they kind of create a little energy, I don't know, triangle of sorts, but yeah, so it was interesting to see that thing. I've had a lot of kind of mediumistic experiences, and I think it's tied to that. So
I believe this brings up a perfect opportunity to, you know, to go through, give a brief example of, you know, what the chakras are, and, you know, basically what they relate to. And I think it'd be really interesting to see how much you and I agree on certain chakras, you know, if we do disagree with any one particular.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the big seven, of course, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big seven.
Most
people, unless you're acupuncture, I don't believe go into a lot of the minor chakras.
Yeah.
You know, hands and feet. Okay, some people work with that.
You're going to make me do it again, aren't you?
What am I going to make you do?
Heads and shoulders, knees and toes, knees and toes. That's to my nephew. I've not seen him in almost a few weeks now, so I'm kind of missing him. So now I'm going to sing that song for him.
There you go. The chakras, head, shoulders, knees, and toes.
That's right. That's how I'm going to teach them to him.
There you go.
And later on, he's going to be mad at me. He's like, that's not the main chakras. So, don't
you? So, yeah. You know, for me, you know, the way I learned is seven chakras starting at base. The first chakra is your survival chakra, where, you know, it's, you know, between your legs. Root chakra.
At the groin, I think of it.
Groin, that's another way, the nicer way to put it.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, for me, that is basic survival stuff, where it's like being fed, being sheltered, being warm, Basically baby stuff for what a baby would want, where, I'm just concerned with being nourished and comfortable.
Yeah, a little bit of money issues in there, but there's some overlap there, I think, between some. Sometimes you'll see money issues in the first chakra, the root chakra.
Well, that makes sense because, the way that this world works at the moment is money is normally the way that we get nourishment and shelter and comfort.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that chakra is hardly ever closed, because it's if you're close to death if it's closed. It's your link to the core of the earth, so.
If you no longer feel like surviving, or your survival instinct is, dwindling,
When they actually select people for the reality show Survivor, they check their root chakra. They see
they
how
have a
that
psychic,
looks.
a couple psychics in there, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, clairvoyant. Let's take a look at your root chakra there.
How much crap can they take and
Yeah.
still, make a good show?
Yeah.
So, and I'll let you take the next one.
Let's see. So we move up there, which we're moving into the is that the sacral chakra? Sacral chakra, which is right, kind of. I always say that it's somewhere above your, right around the top of your bladder. They say it's below the navel, and it's there's no precise point for a person, but somewhere I would say between your bladder and your navel. That one has to do with feelings and emotions, not more raw emotions, not love, romantic emotions, but more raw feelings, and if you're that kind of thing. Also, your sexuality too is oriented there.
I see that as the duality, the left and right yin yang chakra, which sexuality would definitely fit into.
Oh, absolutely, right.
So, and then of course the next one would be the third chakra, which a lot of people when they're talking about feeling it in your gut, this is the one they're referring to, but it also has to refer to your confidence, your ability to move through the world and in the world.
I
One
see it
of,
as a power chakra.
yeah, exactly. If your car has no power, it don't go. If you have no power, you can't move through the world and, or anything like that. So definitely, and that's one of the things I heard years and years ago when I was first learning about the chakras is if you're ever in a fight with somebody, punch them as hard as you can right in the right there in the chakra, that chakra, because it'll short circuit their energy body and they won't have as much strength as they normally do.
I'm gonna not recommend that to anyone. I'm not gonna recommend punching anyone, and I understand the self-defense, blah blah blah, but I'm gonna look at the
Oh
nonviolent.
yeah. Well, I wasn't always a pacifist.
Oh man,
And
yeah.
I've never punched anybody in the gut there during a fight or on purpose.
Oh, okay.
And that's also one of those places where where your abs are, if you tense your abs up there, you can take a lot more pressure there if you do not tense up your abs. And this is also one of those that the connection to its phys to the physical body, if you feel weak or and you don't feel strong, your body over time, over a number of years, can actually bulge out a little bit like a beer belly or something like that to as a physical protector of that
Oh, sure.
chakra to, protect you energetically as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I want to segue a little bit on that. You'll see people that have a lot of weight on them. And sometimes, this is not a blanket, but sometimes that can be indicative of a weak aura, that their auric field, they don't have enough trust in, or the auric field is weak. So the physical body is kind of reinforcing the space that auric body is trying to claim. So there'll be a lot of weight gain as far as this is kind of in the whole the psychology and the energy and the in that kind of emotional body.
I agree with you. It's one of those things where you can't look at somebody and say, "Oh, they have a weak aura or anything."
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's one of those things where you have to actually get to know the person a little bit to actually find out if that's what's going on.
Right. And if they need you to, because personally, I'm like, you know what? Leave people to deal with their own weight issues if it is an issue for them or not. We all have them. So it's like, and then, well, anyway, So I just kind of wanted to make a sidestep that sometimes it's interesting how the physical body will manifest, because that was a good point about the third chakra, the power chakra, people do, they will have a, you know, extended abdomen to protect it. Moving up from that is the heart chakra, which actually is also considered the bridge chakra. Mm-hmm. Donald and I talked about in an episode, we talked about where we tended to work from. You said you were lower, and I said I was upper.
No, I'm upper. I'm upper as well.
I thought you said you worked from your lower half.
No. I naturally work from my upper chakras, but over the past couple of years, I've been learning and focusing on working on my lower chakras.
Oh, then I misunderstood you.
No worries.
Well, the heart chakra is considered the bridge chakra because it is the tie between the lower three and the upper three.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is, it's not exactly where your heart is. It is right in the area. I say that it's pretty much just right in the center of your chest bone there. When you feel a little pounding in your chest, that to me, I could feel that in my heart chakra rather than in my heart. Because I have heart palpitations, PVCs they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor's like, yeah, you have an extremely healthy heart. We don't know why your heart misses a beat and all this stuff. But I think it has to do with the energy that kind of resides in my heart chakra. And I feel it right in the center of my chest. And as we hopefully know, the heart's not directly in the center of your chest.
Mm-hmm.
So that heart chakra energy is kind of there. And it's pretty obvious kind of what that is. The heart chakra is in control of your feelings, as far as your connection to other people, your relationships, your love interests, just love in general. Those are all going to be work within your heart chakra.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then we move on to the fifth chakra, or also known as the throat chakra. This has to do with communication in all levels. To me, it is the epitome of communication for you and everybody else. And this has to do with how you communicate with other people, if they understand what you're saying. And the people that work in entertainment, like actors and musicians, they normally have a very open and highly developed throat chakra. This is one of those where I'm very in tune with hearing a lot of a person's personality and what kind of a person they are through their speech, through their vocalizing. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, David, but this is one when, you know, I rarely ever meet somebody where the moment they open their mouth, it sounds like angels singing. But when I met you and you were introducing yourself at our, the meetup group that we met, it was like, okay, yeah, this person's introducing themselves. Yeah, this person's introducing themselves. Okay, yeah, normal. And then all of a sudden, you were introducing yourself and was like, whoa, there is really so much, just everything. It was like hearing an aria.
Yeah, wow.
And it's one of those chakras, the throat chakra is one of those chakras where, for me, I can tell a lot about a person just by the way they talk.
Hmm.
That goes right in with communication as well. So
I think there's expression also in the throat chakra, because writers, good writers will have a pretty active throat chakra as well.
Well, that's communication. That's still in the realm of communication, though, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And expression is another form of communication. I mean, if you look at communication, you communicate so much by, the way your hairstyle is, by the kind of clothes that you wear, the colors of clothes that you wear, the way that you carry yourself, your nonverbal communications, the gestures you make.
And that all feels very, fifth chakra to me.
Oh, yeah.
Very throat chakra. And, I think of it as like the third chakra as being the who do I think I am,
mm-hmm.
or how I see myself, and the fifth chakra being how others see me.
Oh, yeah.
The part of myself that I show others, and the part that I, feel about myself being third.
Oh yeah, because some people can fake it till they make it, where they can present themselves as very strong, confident, and inside be like, a little teddy bear.
Yeah. One of the podcasts I listened to, I was listening to the author of a book, and I don't remember her name or the book, but the whole premise of it was fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little segue. I'm not a big fan of the fake it till you make it. I understand the principle, and I think there's application to it on occasions, but I think as a normal mode, I don't think it's a healthy mode.
I find this interesting. Why not?
Because if you fake it till you make it so often, eventually what happens is it's kind of like, you know, the wound heals and all of a sudden the skin looks marvelous, but underneath is the infection that you've never examined and that you've not allowed yourself to see. I think there's a risk of burying something in the psyche unexamined. And that's fine if you want to, if that's your choice. But I think if it comes to personal growth, I don't think fake it till you make it is the best attitude. I understand that you are making a choice of how to be, how to feel. But if you make a true choice of how to feel, you're not faking it anymore.
This is actually something I completely disagree with. Because I look at it totally tied in with the law of attraction. And I don't see it as, you know, covering up something, you know, deep in the psyche. I look at it as you have your whole house and you decide you don't like that wall there. The removing of that wall, the renovating of your space is literally faking having the space that you want, you know, presenting the type of personality that you have, you know, developing the skills and abilities that and the type of expression to others that you would like to have, until it feels like second nature, until it feels like it is part of you. And, you know, like with a renovation, it doesn't happen in one day. It takes time, and it takes a little while to get used to and get settled in that new skin.
Well, I do know what you're saying, but you forget that you're dealing with Mr. Semantics, and words are so powerful to me. You know, as you know, I removed the word S-H-O-U, there's another letter in there, D, out of my vocabulary.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so because of the power of those words, and there's a few I have a list, but the fake it till you make it, to me, it's like if you're faking it, then you're not, then you're faking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm faking it, that means that I'm putting a paint a coat over a rotting board. When I know what you're saying is as far as, yeah, adopt the attitude until the attitude is second nature. But to me, it's like if you think of it as faking it, then you're not really adopting it. Because you're not believing it. You just want everybody else to believe it. If you believe it at that time, you're no longer faking it. You're actually accepting it as a reality, even if it's in short bursts.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about. It's true, fully belief. So fake it till you make it doesn't work for me, but that's just me.
So a better word would maybe pretend for the moment, for the situation you're in or something like that?
No need to pretend. You know, either you accept that it's okay or you accept that it's not, and then you figure out how to deal with it from there. But, you know, you see, it's all choice. It's like, you know, okay, I'm going to use the word should just as a thing. When people say, you know, I should have done this, I'm like, no. Either be okay with not doing it or just do it. And I find that I do that all the time. It's like, you know, if I should do this, if I have that kind of feeling of should and I don't,
mm-hmm.
then I usually say, well, you know what? If I'm saying should, then I'm just going to do it. And when I do it, I find that I'm in the moment and appreciate the fact that I'm doing it. Let's say mowing the lawn. It's a hot day. I don't really feel like I have that much energy. And I say, I should be mowing the lawn. Mm-hmm. Then I'm just like, no. There's no more should about it. I'm going to go mow that lawn. And when I'm mowing the lawn, I'm sitting there going, you know what? I'm grateful that I have a house where I could have a lawn, where I could have my dogs, you know, relieve themselves. Yeah. So you see what I'm saying? It's a shift in perspective. I mean, I know we're going tangential on this.
I totally agree with you from the way you explained it right there. But I look at it more from, you know, just my personal experience, where if I am walking into a situation where I'm not really comfortable and I have a lot of anxiety and my nerves are going off, the whole fake it till you make it thing, I'll be like, how would Chuck Norris enter this type of situation? You know, how would Han Solo enter this situation? Or, you know, somebody else that seems like they would work in that context. And then basically I'm like, okay, they would probably do this and this and this. And then I say to myself, okay, we're going to be Han Solo. We're going to walk in as Han Solo.
Well, see, but Han Solo is so iconicized and fictionalized that people forget that the real Han Solos, the real heroes that you see out there, the real heroes are not like, wow, they showed no fear. Well, they showed no fear, but they were scared, you know, beyond belief.
Yeah.
All the heroes will tell you, you know what? I was just as scared as the guy next to me. I just took action on it. But that wasn't faking it. That was saying, I acknowledge my fear, but I acknowledge that I have to move in spite of that fear. They didn't say, I'm not afraid. That would be faking it till you make it. They said, well, I'm scared beyond my wits, but that's not going to stop me from doing it.
Yeah, and I see fake it as you make it. I see that whole phrase as saying, find a way to move forward. And to me, the whole idea of, I'm going to be Han Solo in this situation is basically saying, if I don't find some way to move past my anxiety and nerves, then I'm not going to be anywhere. I'm not going to be anything. And I'll probably just say, you know what? I'm going to blow it off. I don't care. Let's say it was getting up in front of, 100 people and giving a speech on, some topic that you felt really passionate about, but you're definitely afraid of public speaking. It's like me personally, I don't like getting up in front of people. And this is, for example, me for Don Dalton, I love being up in front of people. Mm-hmm. But there was a time where I didn't. And so if I say, how would Han Solo approach this, he would walk in a certain way and he'd have this air of confidence. Yeah, and it's still admitting that, yeah, I'm nervous and I have anxiety, but I'm not going to show the people, that I am nervous and have anxiety.
Okay. I'll accept that.
And that's the whole way I see fake it till you make it is, yes, be whoever you are and don't lie to yourself. And I agree with you with that. Don't pull the blinds over your own eyes. But at the same time, find a strength to move through whatever you need to move through to get done what you need to get done.
Well, we need to get this list of chakras done, so I'm going to find the strength to move up to the sixth chakra here.
Okay. Yeah,
we which is the we get a little tangential. That was fun. I liked it. The sixth chakra, the third eye chakra, as it's commonly called, which some people say is directly between the eyes, and some say is at the forehead above the eyes, kind of forming a triangle with your actual eyes. It is the center of your intuition. It's kind of a weird thing to say. I would say your clairaudience, clairvoyance, because intuition also resides down there in the third chakra, in the gut, between the second, second and third kind of can share it. But the intuition, as far as the perceptual intuition, is up there in your third eye chakra.
Oh, yeah, definitely the clairs, being able to see and hear, and clairaudience, clairvoyance. I don't know. This is what would telekinesis be in that one? I've never felt telekinesis would be in that one.
I don't consider telekinesis any in that category. I don't consider it in the psychic realm. I think that's a whole other. It's a whole other category.
Yeah, and I've also heard that the fifth chakra or the third eye chakra. I'm sorry, the sixth chakra. I'm stuck on the communication chakra, but that's also connected physically to the pituitary gland.
You mean the pineal gland?
I meant the pineal gland.
Okay.
I totally meant the pineal gland.
Well, the two are like neighbors. They're like in those little condos, or they're in those like little houses in New York, the brownstones. They're kind of like that. They kind of sit next to each other. So, yeah. I think the pituitary and the pineal, I think, are kind of closely related. But the pineal gland, yes, is the third eye chakra is directly correlated to the pineal gland and how active it is.
I just see a combination or a connection between the pineal and the pituitary. It's one of those hormonal ones where it regulates a little bit of the hormones.
Right.
And that can be set off by the impressions you receive through your pineal.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, moving on. So the final chakra that we have in the major chakra list is the seventh chakra, also known as the crown chakra. To me, this is like your connection to your higher self, your connection to the world, your connection to the universe, where this is your kind of like your hard line to the divine.
Right. Yeah.
So, and it's also called the thousand-petaled lotus.
That's right. And there's so many schools of thought to the chakras. There is schools of thought that there is a different kind of number of petals represented. That's very Eastern. There's a different several number of petals that correlate with each chakra. There is sounds that correlate with each chakra, and also vocalizations like the om and ah and all that. And there's also very commonly, more commonly acknowledged in use, is the idea of the color of the rainbows, the Roy G. Biv, red, starting up from the base, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet, that these are, when they're working at their best, that they kind of have some shade of one of those colors that that correlate to it. And I it makes sense to me, because if everything is derived from light, if we are light bodies, and the rainbow is just basically the prism of light broken down, you know, starting from the bottom and working your way up, it makes sense to me. And in fact, they say that the chakra that actually resides about a foot or two above your crown chakra is ultraviolet, and the one that resides between your feet is infrared. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. But so now, that, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask if you give any credence to the meridians or like EFTs, you know, the emotional ETF, emotional frequency tapping.
Yeah. The EFT, or yeah. And I think we mentioned this a long, long time ago, and we haven't mentioned it since then. For me personally, emotional freedom technique, that's what it is.
That's what it is, emotional freedom technique.
For me personally, I don't see anything in it, but I know people do, other people do. And
I swear by it.
I know, and I think it has to do with the way that you're wired. And I am wired in such a way where that really doesn't do a lot for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe other people are wired where they're more open to it. You know, I think it just has to do with some people can they are much more susceptible to static electricity, and it shocks them, and it causes a much more of an impression on them. And other people can sit there and go, psh, 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 and it's like, oh, that's just cool.
Right.
Same amount of spark, but, you know, it doesn't affect them anywhere near as much as the other person.
Well, you know, I found that some meridian work does have an effect for me. There's the idea that you can actually kind of hold two meridian points, and the meridian points are tied to the chakras too and to the auric field.
But, oh, I still do meridian work. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, you do meridian work?
Every so often, but the EFT stuff, the way that the actual tapping, I do. I work differently.
Yeah,
I'm able to work it other than tapping, and the tapping is just like, hey, stop, that hurts.
Yeah.
or it doesn't hurt. It's like, hey, what are you doing? That's just annoying.
Yeah, there's that also, that idea that there's certain kind of, they're called, I can't remember what they're called, neuro-lymphatic points.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with those?
Yeah.
Where you massage certain points on your body, and if they're tender, that indicates that is tied to a specific part of your body. It's kind of all tied to reflexology and a lot of that kind of stuff. But, you know, my thought on all this stuff, whether you're doing EFTs or whether you're doing chakra work, the thing is there's, it's such an intricate balance. And if you'll notice with a massage practitioner, if you have a knot, they don't rub the knot and just say, okay, you're good. They have to work this knot, because this knot ties to this knot and this knot, or this muscle ties to this muscle, and all the muscles tie to each other. So you constantly have to do this kind of pivoting, balancing work, where I think when you're working with chakras, because I do a lot of chakra work for myself, and I do it for Jackie, and the chakra works are indicators. You can clear your chakra, and it might make it easier if you're filled with a lot of self-doubt. If you open your chakra up, that's not going to make you a confident person, but it will make you it'll help you feel a little bit more confident, so you can do a little bit of the, what you called fake it as you, till you make it.
Yeah.
Which allows you to feel that extra bit of self-confidence, so you can start to build a pattern. But I don't think that any of these energy work is a panacea in and of itself. I think there's always even working with one chakra, there's usually, if you have a chakra out of balance, there's other chakras that are out of balance. The energy system is just such a, there's so many levers and pulleys and things like that you kind of go with it. And, you know, and you could do the energy body work, but if you're not dealing with the emotional baggage that's involved, the chakras are going to close right up. The energy bodies are going to start to show blockages and things like that.
Exactly.
So you have to kind of do a two-pronged approach or a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you a minute ago. You mentioned that you occasionally see chakras or see
No, no.
see auras. I'm sorry.
Oh, I see auras. Yeah. I can feel chakras in people, but it's just a knowing what's off. I don't see the chakra and go, "Oh, their chakra's a little close here." It's more like I just kind of have a sense of what chakra of them is just
So what I'm
off.
curious about is if the light, if different chakras have different light frequencies, different colors, and you're occasionally see that the auras of people and the auras are connected to kind of like the chakras, do you see certain colors of the aura that you see in someone's aura, and can you do you believe that that relates back to that particular chakra of whatever?
Yeah, it can. The chakra, colors of the aura do relate to colors of the chakra, and they can. They do relate to kind of where a person is on a whole body level. So yeah, there's some relation there. However, I don't see colors of aura. The aura I just see is a different shade around a person, just kind of like a little kind of almost a glow or something like that. There's also ideas that you can have tears in your aura too. And when you have tears in your aura, it means just a place where your aura is not really covering your physical body. And that's a serious energy loss there. And you'll find that people will have, joints are a common place for auric tears and things like that, and energy losses.
Kind of like a hole in the ozone layer.
Yeah, kind of like a hole in the ozone layer. Same idea. Yeah.
Cool. So, David and I would like to thank all of our listeners that have, been with us from the beginning, and our new listeners that this may be your first episode. And for Take the Red Pill, I am Don Dalton, wishing you an enlightening experience.
And I'm David Deere. Take care of that energy body.
Move your body.